Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
In This Truth and Movies, Rampage, or as they're calling it, We Fought a Zoo, the Rock v. Giant Animals movie so big, dumb and implausible it could run for president. And Western, Valeska Grisbach's contemplative portrait of a German in Bulgaria. Hey, Grisbach and hair. A Search for Belonging, A Clash of Cultures, A Horse. Plus, Man with No Name rides again in Sergio Leone's spaghetti Western classic, A Fistful of Dollars, in Film Club. That's your Truth and Movies, a Little White Lies podcast. Hey, everybody, and thank you, listener, for joining us today, where we're joined by Hannah Woodhead.
Hey.
Hello, Hannah. And Elena Lazic.
Hello.
Hello. All good?
Very good.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. That's nice. It's been a testing week, I think, particularly at the movies.
Yeah, it's been a long week. Yeah.
Long week?
All right.
We'll see how much joy these particular films brought to us. And we're going to begin with the extraordinary, thought-provoking rock opus that is, rock opera, you might say, that is Rampage. Swollen by science to an unfeasible size, a creature strides the streets of an American city. He is the Rock, and he's going to save us from giant animals who've only got an inhaled gas made by an evil corporation that wants to genetically modify things. When will scientists learn? Here is The Rock playing primatologist Davis Okoye having a chat with his assistant.
It's weird. You like hang out with animals more than people.
Yeah, well, animals get me. I rescued George. He was 2 years old. George never would have survived on his own.
He definitely trusts you.
He's not just a friend. His family.
All right, Hannah, it was a squabble about who was going to get to review this, but you've gone and drawn the long straw.
2 months ago, when I saw the trailer for this film, I said to my esteemed colleagues, David and Adam, I'm going to be reviewing that for Little White Lies. I made it very clear that this was my thing.
Have you filed your report?
I have, yeah.
What numbers did you? I'm going to go straight to the numbers.
we're going rogue this week. It was a solid fours for me.
Really?
I loved it. And Robbie Collin fighting the good fight on this.
Okay.
The only two critics who seem to have liked this film.
It's a little bit Custer's Last Stand, I fear. And I suspect Elena and I are going to be Native Americans whooping it up as we circle you, bows in hand. But go on, let's hear why you enjoyed this movie so much.
I'll give the listeners some context for this movie. So this is the story of a man called David Okoye, who is a primatologist. He works in a zoo in San Diego with an albino gorilla called George. And due to a nefarious sort of science accident, George is mutated into a giant version of himself who goes on the titular rampage with a giant flying wolf and a giant mutated crocodile. Mm. There's some debate over whether it's a crocodile or an alligator. I think it's a crocodile.
It's not the biggest question I had about this film, I have
really?
To say.
Yeah. For me, that was the thing that really threw me out. Okay. And the opening of this film is genuinely one of the best openings to a film ever. It involves a giant rat in space.
In a space station, yeah. The opening of this film, it's interesting, it effectively does Alien for you in the space of about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then they do Planet of the Apes in space for about 2 minutes. A bit later, they reenact a key scene from Aliens, complete with dialogue. Are you getting this as they're staring at a bank of monitors showing the POV camera outputs from a group of elite Marines? But anyway,
it's also worth mentioning for those who aren't familiar with Rampage, the video game. Rampage was created for a American eatery not dissimilar to TGI Fridays called Dave and Buster's. So it's a video game that was created specifically for a diner that has now been adapted some 30 years later into a massive blockbuster. And it bears no resemblance to the game in which you are a giant monkey or a giant lizard or a giant wolf destroying a city. In this, it's very much trying to stop the giant monkey, sorry, gorilla, destroying a city. But I loved it. I thought it was absolutely ridiculous. Dialogue was absolutely terrible. And it was just really good fun. I think Dwayne Johnson is an absolute delight. And this was a film that couldn't have worked without him. Mm. Without him, it would have just probably been very... I probably wouldn't have enjoyed it. But he's so charming and so charismatic. And he had Naomi Harris and Jeffrey Dean Morgan co-starring, who were also very charismatic, very sort of larger-than-life characters in the film. And it all worked for me. I had a great time. It's funny. It's touching. There's a great message about how America tries to bomb everything and maybe they need to step back and let the scientists try and deal with the problems.
Interesting.
And yeah, I thought it was great, but I am very excited to hear your views on the subject.
Well, Elena, what were your views on the subject?
I agree with you that the opening sequence in space was great, but basically I thought it was kind of all downhill from there because that was so stupid and so funny and in a way like quite sadistic and violent and like really stupid. I couldn't believe that someone would open a movie with this. And I was like, oh, wow, I'm ready for this.
Yeah.
And then everything else, I mean, it was funny and the dialogue is terrible and like there's this amazing... Jeffrey Dean Morgan, usually I really can't stand him, but here... they made him like funny for some reason. He's a Texan guy and he's got an accent, he's ridiculous. And I thought he was quite fun, but usually I really despise him.
Where do you normally see him then?
Just all these like direct to video films.
Okay,
because
he plays a major
reason.
Part in The Walking Dead right after The Walking Dead
I have not seen that.
Yeah,
I'm a big Walking Dead fan. So
I used to be.
Well, I stopped beginning of the later season. I stopped watching it because I kind of gave up caring. I thought he was quite good in The Walking Dead. Again,
he's exactly the same character.
Exactly the same character.
Is he really?
Oh yeah, not exactly the same.
I was like, where does this come from?
But was he not normally playing like that?
He's not Texan.
No, okay. Like, the accent's
maybe slightly
different.
He's from Seattle or something.
But he does live on a farm now.
Oh, really?
With his wife and his kids and several horses.
I wish him the best because he is an engaging character. Based on the performances I've seen, a little bit one note. But anyway, so he was good. You enjoyed Naomi Harris and The Rock.
Yeah, they were fun. It was just so funny to see The Rock like talk to obviously a fake giant gorilla and say, George! All the time and call him Dog. George, no, George.
Like,
and
he does just, it well, I
and
think,
he looks so sincere because The Rock is so good and like, he's so, you believe him in it. And at the same time, you're like, what am I watching?
Right.
And it's amazing.
Am I right in thinking that they've got a John Cena, The Rock movie in the works?
I don't know about that, but I do know they're making a Fast and Furious spin-off with Jason Statham.
It's not Calvin and Hobbes. I want it to be, but it's not.
Dwayne Johnson has coined the name Dwaytham to represent them, which I think is
that's
great.
Very cute.
That's great.
Yeah, but anyway, back to this film.
Yeah, this also is the reunion of two actors from Watchmen. If anyone is a fan of the Zack Snyder,
I like Watchmen.
I like Watchmen.
It's
you know,
good. That's really actually good. In my usual, I don't like Jeffrey Morgan, but I like him in Watchmen.
He's good in Watchmen.
He dies from the beginning, and he's great.
Yeah,
yeah, I completely forgot.
He's really good in that.
And this is the reunion.
I didn't like Watchmen because I liked the original book.
I like them both.
Okay. Anyway, back to Rampage.
This is the reunion of Jeffrey Dean Morgan and Malin Ackerman, who was in Watchmen as well.
Oh, yeah.
And she plays the villainess in this, a very sort of Ivanka Trump style.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Cruella de Vil.
Scheming. And she's got a younger brother whose role is just to stand there and eat. Which is very...
And freak out.
Which is very relatable for me. If this was happening to me, I would be standing there stress eating and freaking out. But it's very strange to have like these two very incompetent villains who are still meant to be quite scary.
I mean, that's the reality of today.
This is true, yeah. Maybe the whole thing is just an allegory for...
Well, they are interesting villains because they are essentially trying to cover up their involvement in the existence of these giant animals. And the way they resolve this is by activating a beacon, and this is a little bit of a spoiler, on top of their building, which will basically draw the animals straight to them.
It seems like a silly way of solving a problem.
Yeah, although I guess if you go and see a movie about 30-foot wolves jumping onto helicopters, you kind of have to check your... questions at the door, really.
There is a great moment, which is in the trailer, so it's not a spoiler, where the wolf is flying, and the Rock just looks at it and goes, "Of course the wolf can fly," which is like the whole film is just you going, "Of course, this is the logic we're buying into." And for me, it totally worked. I thought it was a strange B movie that had somehow become
Now, it's interesting you say that, because I agree with you, Elena. The start was really interesting, and I was chuckling away at all the cheesy liners, etc., until probably the bit after the Special Forces team encounter the wolf. And when we then got to the bit where all the animals rampage around the city, it was just too neat, too polished almost, the CGI, because it made you think of the old classic B movies of giant lizards and stuff. And there's a hokiness about them, a charm. This was almost too tame. The CGI was so good.
It was very realistic. It kind of horrible to see all those people dying. There's a shot where one of the monsters like topples over a boat with people in it. I'm like, oh wow! I just literally drowned like 200 people, and that's
and
just
also
a
is
shot.
That an alligator or a crocodile?
I don't know. I mean, don't ask me about that. I'm sorry.
So that's the thing. I just found
it's very
nasty. And a bit pointless as well, would you say?
I mean, well, yeah.
There's a great moment near the end. Again, this might be a little bit of a spoiler, but probably not, where Jeffrey Dean Morgan's Texan comes in and he goes, "You saved the world!" And it's...
No, they do save the world.
He says, "Thank you for saving the world." And it's just, everyone laughed. It was amazing.
You saved downtown Chicago, I guess. The stakes are not very high in this film. Because all the way through, I was thinking that they're so like, obviously, like, we've got to stop these giant monsters. But once the monsters destroy Chicago and rampage around the United States, they, apart from the crocodile, they can't leave the United States.
Well, except that
the flying wolf could, distance.
But he can't fly, he can just like float.
He can glide.
Well, we haven't seen him try and swim yet. Of course, the wolf can swim. That would be that's the sequel. Please God, no. The Rock is so naturally charming. And I loved him in San Andreas, which was by the same director.
Yeah, which I thought was a lot more serious. They were taking everything very seriously in this. And in San Andreas, and this is just nearly 2 hours, I must say. Yeah, just ridiculousness. But it's so charming to see The Rock playing this character who is ex-Special Forces, but he just really loves monkeys. And, you know, it's nice to see him get to do something where he's not just a hard man who occasionally says something
funny.
Yeah, he's
really branching out with this role.
I think so. And if you've ever wanted to see a CGI gorilla flip the bird to The Rock, then,
this is the movie.
It happens more than once.
It certainly does. So you've given this fours across the board.
Yeah, for me it's solid fours.
Okay. Elena?
I would say three because it's still quite fun, I guess. But I was kind of disappointed.
Were you?
I wanted it to be more stupid if it was going to be stupid.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
It was stupid, but also just kind of not in a very fun way. So after a while, I was a bit tired of it.
Yeah, I would say maybe anticipation three. Although when I saw the trailer 2 months ago, I remember saying to myself, there is no way I'm going to see that film cut to 2 months later. By that point, I thought, this is probably going to be quite fun, but twos afterwards, I would say. Yeah, really.
And one final note about this, which is just a great detail in the film. You notice in the villain's office, they have a Rampage arcade machine. So the inference of that is that they had played this game and thought it was a great idea. That's like the movie in one scene.
Magnificent. So the next Rock appointment at the cinema, which no doubt you've already booked the review duties on, is Skyscraper, which is in June, is that right? That's the one where he does that in kind of 30-foot leap.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't think he does the jump for real.
No, I don't think he genuinely
Tom Cruise would have done it for real.
Tom Cruise would have. But a lot of people drew graphs on photographs and kind of parabolas to illustrate the fact that, you know, humanly, no one could do it without considering the fact
Rock.
That
it's The Rock.
I'd love to see a John Cena The Rock vehicle. Maybe we can make that happen.
I can't believe that it's not already in the works. As soon as they can find an old video game to base it around, that'll be on the way. So, all right, well, mixed feelings then about Rampage. And very shortly, we'll be seeing if there's any more consensus over Western. First, though, let's have a little comment from listener Anthony Ashworth, who's got in touch. You can do the same if you like. Email is truthandmovies@tcolondon.com. There's the Twitter address @LWLies, or there's Facebook, or the Little White Lies website, which has a podcast corner on it. Anthony says, I'm going to see Let the Sun Shine In tonight. No review of it on Truth and Movies. Well, actually, we're doing it next week. I know nothing about it, though, so that's going to be interesting. But, continues Anthony, have you seen it, actually, Hannah?
I haven't, but I've heard great things.
Right. I've seen it twice, and it's great.
Okay.
It's amazing.
Now, Anthony says he saw The Machinist, on our recommendation and was blown away by it. Loved the Ghost Train! Exclamation mark. He says, for what it's worth, his recent favourites that we've talked about, Florida Project, Phantom Thread and The Square.
Oh, by the way.
Yes.
Terry Notary from The Square, the guy who plays the monkey. He's the guy who obviously plays the gorilla. In Rampage. They haven't really changed his face in Rampage, so I was like, oh, this is just the guy from The Square.
Him.
And I recognised it was really disturbing because he just looks human.
But it's Jeffrey
It's him.
That's amazing.
And also, what's funny with this guy is that every time when he plays, because he's like in all the films, he's also Planet of the Apes and stuff like that. Like
when Andy Serkis isn't available.
Yeah, no, pretty much. And
Does he do The Rock as well?
No. He always has like his daughters to play baby monkeys in the films. Oh. And so they're always credited, and I noticed it was really sweet.
That's so sweet.
Very sweet man. I mean, from his internet presence.
Monkey.
But
Although quite menacing in The Square.
Very menacing.
Hmm. Oh, anyway, Anthony Ashworth was saying he hated Mother, and he suggests Four Film Club, How About Taxi Driver and or Life is Sweet? Great suggestions, Anthony. As well as Let the Sunshine In, we're going to be talking about that Guernsey film.
Worst named film of the year.
I really want to see it.
Yeah, I don't know if you need the word named in that sentence, but anyway. Jerome Huben says, since it's almost a year since Jonathan Demme passed away, we should rewatch his best film, 1986's Something Wild, for Film Club.
That's a good idea because I've not seen it.
By the way, another thing we're going to be doing next week, because it is an anniversary, or the anniversary also, of the start of Truth and Movies, we're going to be picking out, asking all our contributors for their favourite three films of the last 52 weeks. It's going to be interesting to see what makes the list there. Huh. And do feel free, by the way, listeners, to send in your top three. Now, anyway, it's time to tackle a film which, who knows, might make somebody's top three of the year. Western, a kind of reverse Auf Wiedersehen, Pet. A group of German construction workers start a tough job in the Bulgarian countryside. But as the work falters and tensions build with the local villagers, one of the workers tries to construct something else entirely. Elena, Western. First off, is it a Western?
Well, I think it's really funny that we have a film that's, if you watch it, it's not really a Western. Like, there's no cowboys or anything, but it's called Western. It's like the time when people said Logan is actually a Western. Well, this one is playing that game as well, but like very obviously. I don't think it is a Western, but it really taps into so many elements of the Western. It's actually quite amusing when you watch it and you notice, oh, they're taking over this land. Oh, they're meeting the people who live there and the outsiders. Oh, there's the beautiful lady of the village and he wants to seduce her. Like, there are all these elements, but they don't feel introduced in a weird, unrealistic way. Like,
also,
they just happen. Yeah, there is a horse that plays a major part in the film. But, it is, in a way, a Western, but it also just is not, like, necessarily...
It's not in the old West.
It doesn't feel forced. It's just, like, a really well... It's a really interesting parallel, but you don't have to even know what Western is like to enjoy it.
There's also the notion of a very taciturn loner, which is a trope you often find.
Who looks amazing, by the way.
There's
watch
two
him for hours.
Yeah, the Bulgarian landscape's good, but most of the film was kind of played out across Meinhard Newman's face. Mm-hmm. Meinhard Newman, the aforementioned construction worker who drifts away from his own group and finds all sorts of things that the movie kind of sets you up to expect one thing, but then consistently fails to deliver on it in a really charming way.
Yes, it really keeps you on your toes. I have to say, when I watched the film at the beginning, I didn't know anything about it, and I was kind of worried. I was like, I don't understand what's happening, I don't understand. And then it started getting into the story, and I was really, really into it. I was like, oh, I started to understand what it's doing. It's so beautiful, so fun, and the story's so moving. And so when it ended, because I was watching on a special link, I just went back to the beginning to rewatch the beginning of the scenes that I didn't understand. I was like, I understand so much better what he's doing. And yeah, it's a really great experience to watch. Like, it's a movie that has a very special like language that you get to understand throughout. And it's very, so beautiful.
I was
really hypnotized by it in a way I didn't expect at all.
Yeah. It's a very different style of editing. And the whole language thing, that one of the issues in the film is that he doesn't speak Bulgarian. The Bulgarians, by and large, don't speak German. And that there's endless conversations in which one of the people involved doesn't understand a word of what's being said. And similarly, it feels like Valeska Griesbach, the director, I'm not familiar with at all, but apparently she was a script consultant on Tony Erdmann, and the director of Tony Erdmann has worked on a producer on this, but they're very different in tone, the two films. But sorry, the thing I was going to say was that language is almost the least important thing in this film. It's all about telling a story through glances or little gestures, even in the editing. It takes a very different approach to kind of telling the narrative, exploring the narrative, I guess.
It's a film you have to pay attention to, and there's no music, which is really interesting. I think for me, music plays such an important role in the film, and I noticed kind of like halfway through, I was like, there's no music in this. It is so reliant on language and the lack of language, and so much is conveyed just through Meinhard's face, even through the way he walks and the way he moves around this unfamiliar landscape, and the interaction between him and the horse. The horse I can't give enough praise to. The horse is magnificent in this.
Yes, amazing.
And it's interesting to see a Western, inverted commas, made by a woman, and the way she deals with this large group of very masculine men.
Would you call it a Western?
I think.
If she hadn't called it Western, would you have thought of Westerns with this film? Really?
Yeah. I think it's the modern iteration of a Western. If you think of something like Hostiles, which is like which came out and was very much billed as a Western, this to me feels more of that genre, and it feels more poetic. It's what I would want from a Western, more so than any very literal interpretation we've had from kind of mainstream Hollywood. Yeah. It's lovely to see a kind of European slant on that as well. It's a very European feeling movie. And again, I went into it not knowing anything about it, and I was really pleasantly surprised. And it's kind of a film you have to stick with and a film you have to commit to, which is why I'd recommend going and seeing it at cinema, because I find it's a lot easier to concentrate on a film like this when you are just sat. I think this is one that really would benefit from seeing it on a big screen.
Right.
And actually, to people who've seen Tony Erdmann, which is very interesting what you said, because it's basically like a feature-length version of that bit where they go to meet the people in the countryside who are going to build something in Tony Erdmann.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was watching Western, I was like, oh, this is so similar. Again, German people in a foreign land and like communicating with the people who are very welcoming and hospitable. If you want an idea of what it kind of is like, is this. But also when it ended, I was so in love with the film. I was like, oh, I could watch like a mini series of this, and then following this man just getting used to this land and learning and
going through this crisis. Happened, because one of the things I really liked about this film is that, as I kind of mentioned, it continually seems to be setting the storyline up for certain twists that you're very familiar with from a billion other movies, and then just not delivering on them.
Especially the thing where they don't understand each other and you think it's going to create a big conflict, but they just sit down and have a drink. Yeah. It's really nice.
It's a very real film in that sense. And I also like the fact that in the end, it even doesn't kind of buy into the central plot line, which is about a man looking for a fresh start, looking for... So it sets that up as a theme, but at the end it doesn't kind of offer it even as an easy answer. I thought it was excellent. I had kind of medium expectations, I guess, but really enjoyed it, and even more so afterwards. So probably a 3, 4, 5 or something like that.
Yeah, same, I think. Yeah. I mean, probably 4, 4, 5 because I've heard that she was really good. But also, like, it made me want to watch her other films, which happen to be on Mubi right now.
Ooh.
If people have Mubi. And I'm going to watch them, like, whenever I have the chance.
Do you know anything about them?
No, I don't know anything.
I don't, but this is her first film in about 12 years. So she took quite a break. I think she's made not a huge number of films before, maybe 2 or 3. But yeah, I didn't know anything about it. I very ignorantly didn't know anything about the director, about Valeska Griesbach. But for me as well, I spent a year in Germany when I was younger and I didn't speak German. And the German sensibility in this comes across really well. They're very pragmatic people. And language in Germany is an interesting creature. I found it very hard to make myself understood, but it didn't really affect my life there. They're very good at getting over it. And I think that comes across in this as well. They're just like, okay, well, we're going to make this work.
Funny because me, I had like a weird like connection with the film, but from the other side, because basically my dad's from Bosnia. And when I was growing up, we would go there every summer and I didn't speak the language because I was being rebellious and I still don't really speak it. But like now I can understand. It's very similar apparently to Bulgarian because I could understand pretty much everything they were saying,
which
was really nice. But like the experience of like going to a country and not speaking the language and trying to communicate with people who are really nice and just have a drink and stuff and a completely different lifestyle from yours. That was like very moving to me to watch that on screen because there are not that many films about it. Mm. It was really nice.
I particularly enjoyed Adrian, played by Suleyman Alilov Letifov. I don't know if he's a professional actor because I believe a lot of these... A lot of the cast weren't actually professional actors. Mm. He had a disconcerting similarity to Papa Lazarus from League of Gentlemen. But once I got over that, I was able to relax and enjoy the movie. Hannah, did you give the scores?
I didn't know. I think it's maybe a 3 in anticipation, just because I didn't know anything about it, and then a 4 and a 5. I think it really does stay with you, and it's one I'd like to revisit as well.
Mm. Excellent. All right. Next up, then, it's time for this week's Film Club.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss. If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This week's Film Club is A Fistful of Dollars, directed by Bob Robertson. Wait. Sergio Leone, actually. Does anybody know why Sergio Leone? You know.
Yes. I found this out last night when I was watching the film and kind of scrolling through Wikipedia. Uh-huh. So when they were making these spaghetti westerns, this is absolutely fascinating. All of the Italian cast and crew took American names because they thought it would make the film appeal more to Americans.
Right.
Ennio Morricone had one as well. I can't remember his off the top of my head. But yeah, they all had these ridiculous...
Bob Robertson.
That was where he went. That was the first thing he thought
of. Like, you could have done better.
That's amazing.
So Sergio Leone is an amazing name. Yeah. It's like Lion, Sergio the Lion. Like, you should keep that name.
So Bob Robertson, that's Robert Robertson.
Oh yeah, that's true. Right. It's like Ask the Family all over again. Into a small town riven by the clash between two clans rides the man with no name. It doesn't take long for trouble to ensue.
Adios, amigo. Listen, stranger. Did you get the idea? We don't like to see bad boys like you in town. Go get your mule. You let him get away from you?
You see, that's what I want to talk to you about. He's feeling real bad.
Huh?
My mule. You see, he got all riled up when you went and fired those shots at his feet.
Hey, you making some kind of joke?
No. You see, I understand you men were just playing around, but the mule, he just doesn't get it. Of course, if you were to all apologize...
I don't think it's nice you laughing, as the man with no name then
That's
continues.
How we talk, isn't
it? Yeah. Magnificent. All right, so, and it's every bit as good as you remember. Listeners, as those of you who watched it will no doubt know. Hannah, why was this picked?
So we chose this in part as a sort of homage to Western. Uh-huh. But also it is being re-released in a special anniversary edition. And it's in cinemas at the moment. I believe it's showing this week in certain cities.
That would be
so
amazing.
So get yourself down and see.
It's worth it for the opening titles alone.
I must confess, I had not seen this and kind of knew what to expect with it because it's A Fistful of Dollars. But yeah, I was blown away that so much effort used to go into opening titles. I don't think you see that as much nowadays.
So, okay, quick fact check on this. It was a remake of Yojimbo, famously, Akira Kurosawa's samurai picture, which itself was based on a Dashiell Hammett book. Kurosawa later said that he made more money, though, off Fistful of Dollars than he ever did on his original film. Originally, it was going to be called The Magnificent Stranger, until apparently about 3 days before the movie hit theatres, which caused some confusion because they didn't tell the cast. And Clint Eastwood's trademark squint was apparently caused by the combination of the sun there in Spain, where it was filmed, and the high wattage arc lamps on the set.
Amazing.
It is amazing, isn't
fact.
It? A listener comment, if you would, Elena.
Yes, Angus wrote, having never seen Fistful of Dollars before, the film was everything I expected it to be in the best possible way. Morricone's score underpins and accentuates the mood of the film so well, and I love the way that Leone uses extreme close-ups to render such striking portraits of his characters.
Oh, he does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
That was very, very much of that time, the way you would just pause the action and spend 5 minutes crash zooming on people's eyes.
Those were my favourite bits, where you kind of got these magnificent close-ups of Clint's face.
Yeah. Now, for me, I think that's quite an Italian thing. There were a lot of movies of that time seem to be. I mean, it might be, you know, quite a universe, but
there's none of that in Western.
No. You're right. So he also mentions, Angus, that the number of actors who turned down the part, apparently Henry Fonda was the first choice, then James Coburn, who proved to be too expensive. Charles Bronson said no after describing it as the worst script he'd ever seen. They then went to Richard Harrison, who also turned it down, but suggested that Leone have a look at Rawhide, the popular American Western TV show. So they went to Rawhide and offered Eric Fleming the part, who was in that. And he said no, but why don't you try this fellow Clint Eastwood? So what, fifth, sixth choice eventually, because nobody else would do it? Clint does this film. Can you imagine it without... I mean, you talk about The Rampage without Rock, but this without Clint. Unthinkable.
I can see why they wanted to have Charles Bronson, because he's got, like, an amazing face.
Right.
Amazing eyes and stuff, but he's not as good as an actor as Clint. I think Clint is, like, such a good actor.
Interesting, because this film is almost a study in not acting. It can't be asked to act.
But even just, like, you know, like, the subtle, like, twitch of the eyes and stuff. I think Bronson... I mean, I've recently rewatched Death Wish, his Death Wish. I mean, by then he was quite older already, but, like, he was so terrible. Like, he couldn't even walk convincingly. It's quite amazing to watch. So, yeah, I'm glad they went for Clint.
Right. I mean, that iconic cool that Clint brings to this and so many other movies until he went a bit funny.
Everything post-Gran Torino was just, just pretend it didn't happen.
Remarkable. And Harrison, Richard Harrison, says that his greatest contribution to cinema was not doing A Fistful of Dollars and recommending Clint for the part. Great quote, as Angus points out.
I hadn't really realised that when this came out, it wasn't thought to be very good at all.
Really?
Yeah, people kind of thought it was very hokey, which...
It is.
It is.
That's kind of
and
the point.
I was talking to a friend of mine. I said to her, I've got to watch Fistful of Dollars, and she's American. And she kind of grew up watching this, because it seems to be a thing in America that your grandparents will all be obsessed with Westerns. So she's like, oh, yeah, I can't believe people ever took those films seriously.
Really?
And I don't think they did. I think that was the problem. Everyone kind of saw it as these, like, ridiculous parodies of what Westerns should be. But watching it now, there's something very charming about the hokiness of it.
Well, because it's an Italian version of... You know, Italy, for example, in the 50s had all their versions of American rock and roll songs. You'd have, I don't know, Bobby Solo and all these kind of people doing... And this essentially was the Italian version, or the movie equivalent of that, but done with an art that transcended in any way the original. Looking back, I was curious to see which one it was, because I mean, I've seen them all, but some time ago. And we're going back, and this one has got so many of the classic bits in it. The iron breastplate.
Yeah.
All those lines of dialogue about you making some kind of joke, get three coffins ready. All that stuff's in this.
The coffin thing is just great. I love the bit at the beginning where he opens the door and the coffin maker's just sat on the roof making a coffin, just like staring at him. It's great. I think... we take it for granted how much the Sergio Leone films have influenced the genre and have influenced cinema and gave us Clint Eastwood, which is...
But who went on to make one of the best Westerns with Unforgiven.
Yeah.
And also, I would say The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, which I've seen, I can't remember how many times, but if this was seen as hokey, I can't believe anyone didn't see Good, the Bad and the Ugly and think this is... I mean, it's just one of the most magnificent epic films ever made. Visually absolutely stunning, but also just the way that Sergio Leone paces it and spins the plot, I think, is just fabulous. It's probably not worth including this film club because everyone's seen that a billion times anyway, but Good, the Bad and the Uglies, as well as being probably the best film title ever. And that's without even getting onto Ennio Morricone's score. But there you go. What a top choice for film club. I wonder what we're going to be doing next week.
So as we've discussed, we are going to be talking about Let the Sunshine In, which is Claire Denis' new film. A film called The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society, which is a terrible name, but apparently I've heard it on good authority, not a bad film.
I've seen it.
You've seen it and you're not a fan.
I'm not going to say before next week. We'll leave that out there.
We will leave that to be determined. And for Film Club, we're doing an early Claire Denis film called Beau Travail,
which is regularly regarded as one of the finest films ever made.
We voted it the best film of the 90s,
Who
The
did?
Little White Lies.
Did you?
Well, I don't know if we voted it or the readers voted it.
Sight and Sound, that kind of thing. They're often saying, oh, it's one of the top 100 ever made.
It is incredible.
Best film of the 90s.
Oh, you've seen it, Elena?
Oh, yeah, I've seen it a bunch of times. I'm really feel really happy for everyone who's going to watch it for Film Club because it is honestly like so dreamy.
Really?
I mean, dreamy is like, no, yeah, but it's amazing.
All right.
It's very quite homoerotic as well, which is great.
Also good.
Always a good thing.
Yeah. Well, that's excellent. So that is our homework for next week when, as you say, we will be tackling that Guernsey film and Let the Sunshine In. Do let us know your thoughts at the usual addresses, truthandmovies@tcolondon.com, etc. Anything else we should know? Any other screenings we should be looking out for? Anything you guys are going to be doing of particular interest? Are you off to Cannes soon, Elena?
Yeah, I am.
When's that?
I think it's beginning of May or something.
Oh, is it
8th of May?
8th of May, right, okay. Are you excited about the lineup?
Yeah, it's very weird, very different.
Why?
Because usually they have like the usual big names and this time they've shaken it a bit. I mean, they're still quite like famous people, but not main competition titles usually.
I think there's going to be some announcements to come out of it. I think Lars von Trier is probably going to make an appearance. Ooh. But the big exciting thing for me, I'm not going, but the big exciting thing is Spike Lee's new film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just the first time he's been to Cannes in 27 years.
Well, it's his first film in a long time, isn't it?
First film in a couple of years.
When was his last one? Made,
The Sweet Blood of Jesus. Black Klansman?
Is that what it's called?
It looks very, very good cast. Adam Driver's in it, who I'm a big fan of.
And nice.
Little fact that is quite fun, Topher Grace is in both Black Klansman and Under the Silver Lake. Two American films in competition at Cannes, Black Klansman and Under the Silver Lake.
All right, by the
and
man who made...
It Follows.
It Follows, which is great,
yes.
No? And just the right level of scary for me.
This is like kind of a thriller, his new one.
It looks a bit like Donnie Darko.
A bit Inherent Vice, a bit pulpy. But Topher Grace, who I've not seen in a film since the mid-noughties, is in both of these films.
Remarkable, isn't it? There was a rumour that Solo was going to be premiering at the Cannes Film Festival. Is that not happening?
No, it is happening.
Oh, it is happening.
It's out of competition. They're doing a special screening. It's the third Star Wars film to premiere at Cannes.
Oh.
Yes, I think one of the original trilogy did, and then... Weirdly, Revenge of the Sith, I think.
Right, that is weird.
At Cannes. It doesn't seem like a natural fit, but apparently Cannes loves Star Wars. So.
Who doesn't?
We get it out like 2 weeks later, so if you're not at Cannes, don't worry.
Okay. All right, then. Excellent. Well, then that is it for this week's Truth and Movies. Thank you ever so much for listening. Many thanks to both Hannah and Elena, and we'll be back next week with those aforementioned movies. Have a super time. In the meanwhile, this has been a 7 Digital production.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. and they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.